Cozy Impact Pod. Welcome, welcome.
We're here.
Welcome.
We're back.
Oh, I love our welcome songs into our introduction. They're so sweet.
Me too.
Oh
well,
my God.
I like that we usually start singing each other's names. So,
Malia.
Yes, Julia.
I didn't realize we were doing that every time. Well, welcome, welcome. So for those of you listening live, this is our live podcast recording. And we are so excited to announce that we have finally figured out what we want to call this thing. And we have a new name for these conversations and what we're doing. And it's called the Cozy Impact Pod. So just picture this: soft blankets, abundant plants and nature, a fire in the fireplace, and dear friends. You're in your element, energized and nourished by the setting and sense of community. So welcome to the Cozy Impact Pod, a virtual embodiment of this experience where we open the door to topics that impactful people and conscious leaders constantly think about but rarely get to talk about. We're destigmatizing, playing, and laughing our way to a greater sense of belonging with our friends in helping professions, from social entrepreneurs like ourselves to activists, nonprofit, and social impact folks, educators, and anyone who wants to contribute to making the world a better place. So welcome home. I know Julia and myself, we just grabbed some tea. I lit a candle. And I think we're going to start with that ritual every time we start this, something like that. Grab something warm to drink.
Oh, yes.
Unless it's 100 degrees outside, and light a candle just to be intentional. I think we were unintentionally doing this before we started, but here we are in this new space with this new intention, which is basically the same intention from our last session. So just for those of you who are listening to us for the first time, I would love to introduce my dear friend Julia Firestone. Julia is an ICF certified transformational coach who partners with social impact, do-gooders, and troublemakers to help find your unique spark, take up space, and thrive. Some call her the social impact fairy godmother. Hi, Julia. Aww.
Thanks, Malia. Hi. And I am, as always, tremendously honored to be here in conversation with you, my friend Malia. Malia Wright-Mehrer lives deeply for curiosity, creating open spaces for detangling and exploration. She focuses on transformation in the field of DEIA with a background as a counselor in integrative somatic healing. Some call her Wise Earth Mama. Hello, Wise Earth Mama.
Hello, fairy godmother. Social impact. We're going to really run with these characters.
I love it.
I'm just so excited today to have this conversation around comparisonitis. And we always kind of briefly think about what we want to talk about and what's sparking our interest. And I think this one comes up again and again and again because I think we feel it a lot ourselves. And when we start to talk about it more and we start to name it even more, it starts to lose its power. So Julia, do you want to kick us off and just tell us a little bit about what comparisonitis is?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not a super complicated concept, really. It is just the experience of comparing yourself to others. And I think where the itis comes in and where we sort of, I guess, half jokingly medicalize how we talk about comparison is when it becomes a barrier to us doing the things we want to do or showing up the ways we want to, or taking care of ourselves the ways that we need to. And so I think it's particularly become a phenomenon. And I think the usage of the word is fairly recent and has, I haven't done that search you can do where you see the word usage over time, but I'm quite sure. It's a pretty recent concept and has grown a lot, in particular, I think, with the growth of social media. And so much of the experience of comparisonitis, I'm sure you'll agree, our listener friends, happens when we are on different social media platforms, whether it's on the kind of personal front, seeing the photos of a friend on vacation, looking like they're having a glamorous, fabulous time, when they're, you know, perhaps not showing the full story, or, you know, comparing yourself to others. If you're a job seeker looking on LinkedIn and it feels like everyone else is getting a job and you're being left in the dust. So we'll dig in so much more to the actual experience of comparisonitis and what you can do about it. But I really think it's just the starting point is the ways in which we as humans compare ourselves to others.
Yes. And I love that you shared that about vacations, because I actually just got back from visiting my family in Hawaii. And I don't post a lot on Instagram, but sometimes I just like sharing joy things, like things that make me feel joyful. And sometimes I do share more vulnerable things and honest things, but I think especially around social media, it has become a much more challenging space to share. And it's beautiful in so many ways, because when you do get to share and when you do get to be very vulnerable, you do have a lot more, you create a lot more space for other people to be vulnerable. And also at the same time, there is so much disconnection from honesty and realness that happens in comments. And it's like, yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed that separation, you know, that separation of humanness when you see someone on a screen and you might want to say something in the comments, or you look at other people's comments and say, why did they write that? But there is this separation of humanness, even if you are being really vulnerable. But I love that you shared that about vacations, because I definitely shared about my vacation. And it was beautiful and it was lovely, but it was also really eye-opening. I went to go see my family in Maui and also in Oahu, and just hearing about the effects post-fire in Lahaina. Mm-hmm. And I think it was actually very eye-opening for me, because it made me think a lot about how there are so many global catastrophes that may happen. We have a huge one right now. And what starts to happen when there's another one or another new thing? And I was in Maui and realizing how many unhoused people there are right now. And a lot of people don't have resources. And so just hearing stories about my family members, friends, and, you know, people that they know who are deeply affected by this fire. And I was thinking, whoa, I haven't heard anyone talk about this fire in months. Yeah. Yeah. And I said to my cousin, I was like, when was it again? Thinking it was like last January, like a year ago. And she said August. And I was like, what? So much has happened since then. And so it just made me think about that. And so, but there is this realness of hardships and vulnerability and experiences that you don't always see. And also at the same time, I was like, oh, I really want to talk about this, but I don't know how to talk about it on social media. And maybe this is the place right here in the Cozy Impact Pod.
Yes.
To talk about, talk about these things going on in other places. But I think something that Julia and I, we were just talking about, is how this comparisonitis shows up in our life on social media. It shows up in our friends, in our family, in our careers, of course. And it also shows up in the ways that we interact with social justice and social activism and how we show up in the world. And we've talked a little bit about that so far, and I know we're going to continue to talk about that too, but what starts to happen when we compare ourselves to other people and how other people are responding. And again, going into the nervous system response, I mean, this applies to all career life, so showing up in the world, is what starts to happen when we go into a freeze response or a collapse response or a fawning or appeasing response. And so hopefully, as we name this and explore it even more, we get to talk about how we can hold more space for those things. So now that I'm thinking about this, Julia, I would love to ask you, what's the most recent comparisonitis experience that you have had?
I want to ask you the same too, Malia. So literally yesterday.
Right.
it's every day. But so I may have mentioned on the podcast before that that I have an autoimmune disorder, which occasionally flares up if I am not taking good care of myself and if I am doing too much and not sleeping enough. And this was one of those weeks. And so I just kind of caught myself yesterday morning after a coaching session. I was like, "Woo, I am run into the ground, like done." And I realized I needed to kind of put myself to bed and spend the day, you know, really take myself off everything I had for the most part. And I made the mistake of popping onto LinkedIn at some point just to, you know, scroll a little bit mindlessly. And I was like, oh, everyone else is doing things. They've all got news to share and events going on and they're posting every day. And I was like, what I felt was huge pressure to post. And for example, every Friday, I try to do this Follow Friday post, and highlight great people who I've interacted with over the last week. Or just, you know, give a shout out to leaders or people I admire who I think we should all be following. And this week, I'm just like, I'm not doing it. But I really had to spend some time beating myself up first and feeling like, oh, I really should be posting. Why am I not posting? Everyone else is posting. Why do I have, you know, this body that gets angry at me sometimes and just like knocks me out? And so, yeah, I felt it yesterday. I'm curious. Oh, go ahead.
How did that make you feel?
Well, I didn't clock it as comparisonitis at the time. I was just I just took a few minutes to internally berate myself for not being good enough, which is what comparisonitis does to us, right? Is like my experience of it is often I look at what 20 different people have done and think about their cumulative effort and energy that they've put into something, creating something or into the world. Mm-hmm. And then I have an inner monologue that asks, why can't I do the cumulative work of what 20 other people did? And that's sort of the weirdly imbalanced dynamic of comparisonitis in my experience. And so I felt that, I experienced it, and then I said, okay, but what I need right now is to rest. So I hit go on another episode of Queer Eye and went in and out of napping. And that was that. But what about for you, Malia? What, I mean, recent experiences of comparisonitis or kind of like, when does it tend to come up for you?
I'm going to answer those two parts. Yesterday, right? When you said yesterday, I was like, what? Yeah, me too.
Yesterday,
what was happening? I think there was a new moon. You know, I think a lot of reflection too. I'm not saying that it's specifically around the new moon, but who knows? And some of the work that I do is connected to this group, I guess, I don't know what to call it, called Rooted. It's a global village. And really the exploration is around deep somatic abolitionism and kin building and kind of rewiring the ways we are in community with each other kind of dismantling structures of race and systemic oppression, and also moving beyond it. Mm-hmm. And so this is a part I actually do mixed race groups of exploration. We have an event coming up soon. Yeah. Shout out. I'm going to plug in.
Please do.
But there's a group that we're doing, a 4-month group. It's one session a month with in between kind of contact sessions. And it's about exploring for mixed race folks or multicultural biculture, but specifically around the racialized experience for mixed folks. And it's called Where Do I Belong? And it's called also the Belonging Ambiguity Project. And so it's a really beautiful exploration. This is the second year that we're doing this. And I feel really grateful to be a part of it. Menakem wow. is a part of it too. And we have Corrine Bell and Letizia, last name. Oh my gosh, can't believe this, but I'll write her name too. And so it's just really amazing. So a lot of this work in Rooted, I really love. And we also have, I'm not part of this specific session, but we have Kai Cheng Tom, who is a part of our next upcoming sessions, for anyone who knows her. And there's this workshop, 3-month workshop starting in Rooted, and it's all about playing with edge and playing with that in-between space. And there was an ad that came out online that I follow, of course. It's called Tending the Roots, but I follow them, of course. So I saw this ad about Kai's workshop coming up that's part of Rooted, and it was saying if you want to come just for the 3 months, you can, or be a part of the membership to get the series of workshops and everything. And it was talking about how, you know, what happens when we start to move beyond the limitations of social media, and are we feeling exhausted from rigidity and polarizing natures that happen, and what happens when we explore the in-between. And I see, I'm looking at Julia right now, and you're nodding your head right now because you can really understand that. Like we've talked about, especially on other platforms of social media. This is why we love doing these lives on LinkedIn, is it feels like a much more supportive environment. But on other platforms, there can be this volatile nature of reactivity. And even if it is something that's really supportive to the global collective. So anyway, it was just talking about this post saying, talking about edge play, talking about the in-between. If you knew Kai Cheng Tom's work at all, you know that she is a huge activist for just social issues, a trans woman who is really here to fight for humanity, really. And this is just deeply generalized. Definitely go check her out. But if you knew the work that was coming out of Rooted, if you knew the work that was coming out of these conversations and these explorations, really what the goal is ultimately is to bring more space so we can show up even more fully for nuance and support for other bodies, for support for all bodies in so many ways. And so this is the comparisonitis piece of it. So this is posted. I was really excited because I of course love this community, you know, always question everything, but I love this community. Mm-hmm. And I see their comments on this post. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I see comments that are on this post, and I see there's like 12 comments or something like that. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what people are saying, if this is resonating with people. And all, I would say 10 out of the 12 comments were people saying, this is not exact quotes, but basically the gist of it. So frustrating. Whitewashing, white spirituality, white bypass, spiritual bypassing, when they're not talking about Palestinians, when they're not talking about Gaza, when they're not talking about these things going on in the world. And it's like so frustrating. I'm tired of seeing this whitewashing, white spirituality. And I just was like reading these comments, and my first reaction was, what am I doing? What are we doing wrong? And I was like, my first reaction was shame. And then I was like, wait, hold on. The whole point of this is having both conversations. The whole point of playing with edge is not going into immediate reaction and having support. Also, everything deeply rooted, inrooted, is in support of Palestinian people. And also having these conversations and also showing up and being a support very deeply in global collective and doing the best that we all can. But it was just interesting because my first reaction was, oh my God, I'm not posting enough. Oh my God, I'm not sharing enough. Oh my God, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I'm not being a good enough ally. And because they were criticizing something, and then I was like, but they don't know what this is. And that's okay. I talked to Karine Bell, one of the co-founders of Rooted. I talked to Karine about it actually this morning, and we were just like, you can't force anyone to be open to these conversations. You know, we're not going to try to carry weight of this because I'm not doing this workshop. I'm not facilitating it, but in the collective community, I'll say, being accused of not doing enough, being accused of not focusing on what's important. And it's like, what happens to your brain when you think and you compare yourself and say, oh, maybe I'm not thinking about what's important? And it's not bad to question, right? But maybe I'm not doing enough. Maybe I'm not. And this shows up a lot in how we do show up. And again, like I mentioned before, what happens when we go into that fawn? What happens appeasing state? What happens when we go into the collapse state, the freeze? And then we don't move. Exactly. When in reality, the whole point of this workshop is coming to the nuance and conversation and moving through rigidity in all aspects, so that we can show up even more for everyone.
It strikes me that our different examples of comparisonitis tap into specific emotional experiences. You talked about shame and this sense in a sort of activism space or a racial justice and healing space around, you know, not enoughness. Or inadequacy. My story, which I think is less nuanced, but just kind of a daily occurrence type experience. There's a sense, I think, of a similar, like, not good enough or, and also maybe some envy. And so I think envy is an interesting emotion to explore. We've already talked about shame, but there's so much there too.
Ooh, that is so true.
I wonder, Malia, like, what do you think is at the core of comparisonitis? Or like when we feel bad because we're comparing ourselves to others, like what is that about?
I love that you shared envy, because when you said envy, there was something that sparked for me, because I was thinking about the situation. My first response was, wow, I wish I had the energy to to be so, I don't know what the word, I want to almost say overtly out there. And this doesn't just apply to activism, but this applies to everything. You know, but it's like, oh, if only I had this energy.
Yeah.
If I only I had this space. And not saying there aren't blocks, you know, I understand we all have our own blocks. We all have our own layers that maybe we could show up a little bit more. I don't know. But if we're kind of putting that in another area right now, but maybe if I had a little bit more energy, maybe if I had a little bit more space, maybe if I had the bandwidth to hold more, then I could do things in the ways that other people do them. And when as I'm saying these words out loud, it's making me think about that phrase, then I can do things the way other people do them. Because as these words are coming out of my mouth, I'm thinking, I do have a lot of space. I do have a lot of energy. And I might do things differently. And that doesn't make things any worse or less significant or less important, less of a human than anyone else. And when we're thinking of that rigidity again, you know, even just in career stuff too, like how many times have I told myself, oh, if only I could just post more. If only I just had the energy to write more or to post all the time, to create a program. And then I was like, you know what? I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to post all the time. Yeah. And I it's taken me many years, and now I actually feel at a pretty good place with it, where I'm like, maybe I don't need to do that, but it still shows up. Maybe if I have more, I can do the thing that I see other people doing. Instead of bringing this into what do I have space for now? And how is that enough?
Yeah.
And again, I always say this. It is important to always question those things for ourselves and to check ourselves. And to ask, ooh, am I attached to something else? Am I carrying something else with me as I'm, you know, being in this more squishy, soft place?
Totally. I'm reminded, Malia, as you talk about the if I only had. Well, one, I want to say I really started thinking about that from my friend Caroline Auerkirk, who led a great one-day retreat not long ago and talked about this, like, if I only had more hours in the day, if I only had, you know, this beautiful apartment, if I only had, you know, two more clients, like whatever that is. So that I'm reminded of that. But also in a more kind of comedic context, do you remember when Kim Kardashian, one of the many times she was really offensive, when she said, what was it? It was like, we all have the same hours in the day. Was it her? Did she say, like, we all have the same amount of hours in the day as Beyonce? So, like, what are you doing, you lazy bleep, bleep, bleep? And which was, like, so obviously offensive, but done in this sort of meant to be empowering, coachy thing of, like, here we are with the same time. Why are you failing? So really tapping into our sense of comparisonitis and shame and envy and all of these things. And obviously she has a boatload of money that she can use to pay other people to do all of these. She's not posting to all these things. But I think the concept of time is a really interesting one when we think about comparison to others too. How does the time we spend also reflect our values? And how might that help us to find some ease or acceptance in just where we're at and what we're sharing in the world, what we're contributing to a sense of community or collective change, that's like actually can give us a sense of enoughness.
Mm-hmm. The concept of time.
Just the concept of time. Let's just let's just noodle on the concept of time.
I saw this post the other day that was Victoria Beckham, and somebody asked her, what's the most luxurious thing in the world? And she said, time.
Yes, I'm with Posh. I love that that's what her answer was.
Yeah, right? The most luxurious thing is time. And also time, there's this incredible exercise I did once where we were given in this workshop the opportunity to think about how long we think 1 minute is. And then when we thought that minute was up, then we would write in the chat and say, like now, you know, and then you would see how different people's perception of time was. And I would say most people, it was something like 40% or 45% of the people said it was like 45 or between like 30 and 45 seconds. And then another 45% were like a minute and 30 to like a minute and 45 seconds. And then there was like that small 5-10% that said it was actually at a minute. And it was really interesting to think of how 90% of the group, and this is like, I don't know, 200 people in this workshop.
Wow.
90% of the group had no concept. I think mine was like 45 seconds and had no concept of what an actual minute was and how a minute feels is so different. That I just think that is so interesting in the concept of time. My husband always says, I feel time poor because of his work demands and because of the things that he's doing. He's like, I don't feel like I'm lacking things. I feel like I just want more time, more space. Mm. And what starts to happen when we do challenge the ways that we work with time and how time feels, even just thinking about a time where it felt like so long. You know, you're spending an hour doing something and it feels so long. And then you do something else in an hour and it feels like 15 minutes. Probably like this call is going to feel like that.
Oh, always. But and similarly, like I'm in New York City, and every time I'm like waiting for the light to change to cross the street.
Right.
It's like an hour, right? And it's not. And you see everyone now pulls their phone out just before crossing the street. It's like the waiting time of, I don't know, 1 to 2 minutes can feel so different. But like bringing us back to comparisonitis then.
Always
like,
bringing us back.
If we do all have the same amount of time in the day, as Kim said, because, you know, we're always quoting Kim Kardashian here. That was sarcasm. We're not. That was a first. you know, what can we actually do? Like, I think it's inevitable, and tell me if you disagree, that we will experience this sense of comparisonitis and as part of that, things like shame and envy and not good enoughness, or just not enoughness. What can we do to mitigate the like the worst parts of that experience that keep us from taking action or make us feel small or bad? Like, what do we do with that?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is when we really honor the parts of ourselves that have their own genius and connected genius. Like when I'm thinking about what I'm not doing or thinking about how I could be better, I like to pause and think, well, what actually does feel supportive right now for me? Like the same thing you were talking about before. Everyone's showing up. Everyone has things going on. what is going on right now that feels really supportive? When I'm thinking about, you know, this situation with me yesterday, and I was like, am I not posting enough? Am I not sharing enough? And I was like, no, I'm having a lot of conversations. I'm donating in the ways that I can donate. I'm conversing in the ways that I can support other people, what I can do here. I'm also bringing in the invitation of new conversations around it. And that's something that is really valuable. And I think there is something, I'm going to put, like, I feel like everything I say has like a double edge to it, because like we've talked about, there's no absolutes.
Yeah.
So I always am very conscious of saying something like, it's like this, only this. And it's not, it really isn't, because there's a power, a strength, and a challenge to most things.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm thinking about when it does feel really supportive to show up in the ways that I can show up, and I do feel more aligned, and I trust the wisdom of my body, and I trust the wisdom from the earth, and I trust the wisdom of greater collective support, and I trust the ways that I am able to show up in of service, because a lot of listeners are working in service professions. When I trust that I am human and I am doing what feels aligned and supportive and the best that my human body could do in this specific moment, the other side to it is that can change.
Absolutely.
The other side is, it's not saying I will always be tired and not wanting to post. Mm-hmm. I will always be not working. I will always be not a good enough activist or ally.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do move into that space of, I trust that I can be in this place right now in this moment, and that can change. It is bringing a sense of, you know, my body wants to reach, right? I want to reach when I'm like, I'm not doing enough. Their lives are so much better. Oh my gosh, like I just want to reach, and I'm reaching my arms out right now. And I want to reach out for something. And when I stop reaching and I start sitting, I actually have more room to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And something I think we talked about, I can't remember if it was last episode or before in the New Year's resolutions episode or in our episode about working hard, and that for a very long time, I just was like, why am I just not figuring it out? My business.
Oh, yeah.
Why can't I just keep whatever, a job, show up what good enough for my boss? you know, just the ways that what we say to ourselves in those ways. I know one of the things that does show up a lot for my husband, and he also with ADHD and rejection sensitivity, is what if I get fired? Mm-hmm. What if I am not good enough? What if they fire me? And I always tell them, there's no way you're going to get fired, because no one else can do your job. But it's what starts to shift when we bring our awareness into our own autonomy and how we are all puzzle pieces for this collective greater good.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
There's this saying, I studied Vedic sciences and Tantra and yoga. And there's this saying, I remember one of my teachers shared, this was like 10 years ago, and said, we all have, it's almost like you look at the stars, and with the stars, you see every single person, tree, rock, ocean, river, plant, like little critter. Everything is a perfect puzzle like this imprint of your outline perfectly is enmeshed in the sky. And I love that image because when we do show up in the ways that we show up, then that perfect enmeshment is going to be even more supportive. And I think about this with activism all the time too, because there are people who are on the ground, let's go fight till there's no end. And what happens a lot of the time is burnout. And there are great people to support people in that way. One of them being Taj Smith, who I will also, I'm going to tag all these people. And now I'm feeling self-conscious if I said his name. I'm always like, did I missay someone's name? I'll tag him. But Taj, I really hope I didn't. I didn't. Your last name is Smith. Taj, I'm sorry if it's not. And I deeply care for you. but Taj solely focuses on burnout recovery for social activists and people who work in DEI and social impact. So burnout recovery. So when we get to that point where people work so hard and fought so hard and then they get exhausted and they get burnt out, then I like to say, that's where I come in. I'm like in the undercurrent during that whole time. And then I am able to show up even more so when other people are tired. And there is a purpose to that. But sometimes with the linearity that shows up in our culture, we don't have a lot of room for all of these things to exist. Absolutely. Have you felt that way, Julia?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, there are so many roles that each of us play. And so it would just be such a silly notion to think that we can all play the exact same role, do the exact same thing, or that we all show up with the same skills and talents and, you know, ability to communicate in the ways that are impactful. I mean, I think how wonderful that we bring different skills and strengths and passions together to form a wider net towards positive impact. And, you know, you are so touching on something that was coming to mind for me in terms of, what we do with comparisonitis. And I think one thing that's really at the core of that experience is the tension between individualism and collectivism or just a collective mindset. And what I so love about that image that you shared from Ayurvedic science, did I get that right? Mm-hmm. Of that like celestial interconnectedness and the puzzle pieces, but in the sky, is returning to, you know, really seeing us as a collective whole, as, you know, the sense of oneness, and all playing a role. And I think we sometimes find this intensity in the experiences of comparison to others when we are feeling scarcity or we are feeling lonely or isolated or not good enough. Like maybe the comparisonitis actually happens because we're already not feeling good enough or connected, right? And so I think reminding ourselves when we feel that intensity that we are all connected to each other, and whether that comparisonitis is coming up around sort of activism and responsibility, or, you know, about the pressures and expectations we put on ourselves for what we, you know, put out into the world on social media, or, you know, how many programs we've built, or how many lectures we've given, or how many jobs we've been offered. Like, if we really think about a more collective vision and understand that maybe the person who got that speaking opportunity is going to create ripple effects in the world and feel a sense of delight that that voice gets to be heard, knowing that there are infinite other opportunities for our voices to be shared with each other. Mm-hmm. It just opens so much more spaciousness, and mm. feels so tied to that visual that you shared.
I love that you shared that, Julia, of creating more space for everyone. And I was thinking about this actually yesterday because you sent me a post like to do an article or pitch for a somatic body-based teacher movement person. And so I was reading it and I did send in the pitch for
this.
You did,
yay.
Yeah, I did, yay. But I also was thinking of my friend Kendra. And because she's a beautiful somatic-based teacher and she does such incredible work on the cellular level of connecting to the earth and bringing relationship back into earth. And she's so brilliant in so many ways. And so I sent it to her and I said, I also sent in this pitch, but I think you should also send in the pitch if you have space for it, because this would be so cool for you. And I don't care who gets it. Or who gets the opportunity, and maybe it will be neither of us, but both.
I was like,
or both of us. But I was like, I would love for you to also have this opportunity and let the voice that needs to be heard in this way be heard. And, you know, she responded by saying, thank you so much. Like, more is more. I really appreciate that you gave me the opportunity that you're hoping to get. And I think that's something that really excites me is, you know, if an opportunity is coming my way, or if I think of you, you know, I think of you, Julia, if I think of you, that would be, oh, you'd be such a beautiful fit for this thing that I might be given an opportunity for. Then I want to share that wealth and share that wisdom, and that we're not here on our own doing it by ourselves. And we can all utilize one another in all of our gifts and talents.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think an actually great practice for feeling more abundance and feeling less comparisonitis is, I talked about my Follow Friday post that I do most weeks, but I'm not doing this week, is to actually shout out lots of other people or pass an opportunity to someone. And it's not about, you know, it's noticing the difference of if you're undervaluing yourself or feeling like, oh, I'm not good enough to do this thing. It's not that energy. It's the like, wow, this opportunity would be so impactful for you, you know, and really sharing like a sense of joy and pleasure in creating more opportunity for other people. And I think it can actually really challenge or quiet some of those feelings of comparisonitis if as more and more of us show up in that way and seek opportunities to, you know, shout each other's names, you know, in a loving celebratory way in rooms where, you know, that person isn't present. Like that,
yeah.
That really, it has knock-on effects that are so positive for all of us, but it also feels really good, you know, to be able to say, oh, you really have to talk to my friend Malia. She's so skilled. She's an amazing facilitator and educator and an expert in DEIA practices. And she's just, you know, such a skilled healer. Like, it feels great to be able to talk about other people that way. And I think as we're,
especially when it's aligned.
Yeah.
You know, when you really connect to the thing and it's not just, oh, I'm going to share this because I feel like I should share it because I feel like that would be good. No, if it speaks to you,
yeah,
if it resonates, what starts to happen at that point?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to also mention, you know, I think two things as we were coming into this conversation and as we've been talking around comparisonitis, I think on the front end and the back end that I want to mention, and I'd love your thoughts on these too. I think one thing, one practice that I'm not great at doing, but that I'd like to do more of, and that I definitely encourage my coaching clients to do, is actually to pause and define success for ourselves. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we experience comparisonitis because we haven't set those kind of guardrails or goalposts for it. Wow, look at all this sporty talk into the it for ourselves. Like if you don't know, like if you can say for yourself, if I post twice on LinkedIn this week, that's success. I can check the box. I can feel great about it. Then you see other people post three times and you're like, wow, I'm a piece of garbage. Like, why didn't I do it three times? But if you already know that success for you is defined as two posts this week, then you've done it. Success. And so, you know, that's like a really micro example. But I think actually defining success for ourselves and counting those wins, you know, whether that's just like where you keep track of your tasks, you know, that you're doing that day, if it's just a matter of like, you know, putting the check mark or crossing something off on a to-do list or just mentioning it to a friend, like, hey, I did this thing and I feel good about it, saying it to yourself. Like, I think, yeah, that practice on the front end of defining that success in advance really helps look differently at the comparison experience. And then the other thing is very meta. It's exactly what we're doing here. And we always come back to this. But I think the more that we can share our own experiences of things that we feel shame around or where we feel small or bad about ourselves, the more we can talk about it openly, the less alone we all feel. And like you said at the very top of this conversation, Malia, it starts to calm our nervous systems and kind of make right size those experiences of comparisonitis.
Make right size. I mean, it's interesting. I love you sharing that, because how often do we have an experience that feels so big?
Mm.
So big. And it might still have charge. It might still have its own thing. But maybe that big thing is the size of a golf ball instead. And we can actually look at it and say, okay, what information is this giving me right now?
Yeah. That's a great question.
If I'm noticing myself comparing myself to others, what nugget can I learn from this or have this speak to me right now? And also, if you're kind of talking a more intuitive practice too, is you might even sit there, imagine that golf ball size charge. You can even place it in your hand and say, hey, little one, what do you want to tell me right now? What do you have to say? And maybe the answer is, I think you might have a little bit of space to show up more. Or maybe it's, you know what? You're doing great. I think you can rest. Hey, little one.
I love that. What a fabulous practice and question. And you're tapping into some parts work in that, I think, this inviting outside of yourself. And we haven't officially had an episode on internal family systems and parts work, but it does come around. And I think that's what a fabulous practice to close out on. But before we fully do, Malia, is there anything else that you have been just longing to contribute to this conversation or mention that you haven't had a chance to share?
I think with kind of that closing practice, I think I just want to pause for a moment and just settle into the body and imagine the body feeling so wide. The hips wide, the torso wide, maybe the arms go out wide. Maybe you lean back into your chair or your seat or whatever you're connected to right now and just settle in and be there in this space. And as I was talking about this sky, the stars, if you become wider, it doesn't move or take away from other people's space. It just shifts. And now I'm imagining it kind of like this evolving amoeba or water, oceans ebbing and flowing. And that's what I wanted to share. So cozy.
So cozy. Thank you for that practice, friend. And Malia, you mentioned some exciting work that you have coming up. So before we sign off, I wanted to ask, what do you have going on and where can people find you?
Like I mentioned, we have this Belonging Ambiguity project starting in March. And that's really, I'm so excited about what shows up in mixed spaces, the mixed experience and how that can mirror how we show up as a collective, kind of moving through all barriers. So that if that resonates with you, if you are mixed and you're like, oh, I've never felt like I belonged anywhere. And you might experience that if you're not mixed, but this is specifically around the mixed experience. Hopefully we have more spaces for everyone. but that's showing up and we'll post that in the show notes and other places. So you can learn more about that too. And we also have a disability inclusion training coming up in April. So I will also be sharing about that too. That's called Windmills, Changing the Attitudes of Perception and Ability. Okay. And Julia, what do you have going on?
Yeah, a vacation, well, I do have a vacation coming up, which I'm very excited about. Those of you on audio can't see, but I am the most pasty I get all winter, and I can feel the lack of vitamin D. So I'll be in Costa Rica for a bit. So you won't find me on email or on LinkedIn the next couple weeks. But what I'm so excited about is I'm hosting an in-person one-day retreat on March 24th, which is a Sunday. This might be my first time telling you about it, Malia.
I don't know about it.
Yeah. And it's just in person one day in New York City. So this is my first retreat since Malia and I led a retreat about a year ago, February 2023, in the south of France. And it's also all about belonging. So it's called the Belonging Lab. And I'm so excited to offer a more somewhat more affordable in-person gathering that will be the full day. I'm planning lots of really juicy connection opportunities that will really nourish the impact folks in our community. So you'll find that at juliafirestonecoaching.com.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. I'm also going to plant the seed for us to also do a retreat in the future. I'm just plugging this in. Mark this date. This will happen in the future, because I'm just thinking how fun it would be to all be together and exploring all these things through the body, through writing exercises, through visualizations and meditations. And I'm so excited.
I like that you said mark this date, and the date is the future. So if everyone
mark this date, future. 2024, 2025.
Yes. Just hold your calendar. Hold your whole calendar.
Just mark it all off.
But really, like, if that sounds exciting, you know, give us a push, because we're people who like to ideate. We like to come up with really joyful ideas, and actually it really helps if we know that there's genuine interest. So you can DM us on LinkedIn. Yeah, we're
projectors. We respond.
So let us know that you have that need. You can DM us on LinkedIn. You can email us. You can message, comment in the event page too. Seed is planted, so help us water it. Yay.
Well, thank you everyone for being a part of this, and we will see you soon.